It's time for the Thursday Morning Report. This morning I'll be speaking with Abby Martin. She is the founder of Media Roots, where they are reporting from outside party lines. We'll be talking about the left-right paradigm in general and get to some particular issues from a different point of view. Good morning, Abby. Are you there?
Good morning, Doug. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
You
bet. Thanks for having me on.
Well, can you just tell us a little bit about Media Roots and what you're doing over there?
Sure, Doug. About a year and a half ago, I started a website solely just to have a giant archival base of information because I felt like I didn't see an aesthetically pleasing website that gave me the functionality where I could search just a giant base of everything that I thought was not being reported on enough. So it started off as that, and once I got the website going, I got a lot of feedback. I got soldiers involved writing through anonymity abroad. I got a bunch of citizen journalists involved where now they're reporting in just their respective communities for me. And now it's just turned into a citizen journalism project where we have a bunch of people just going out and conducting citizen journalism. There's a renaissance of citizen journalism happening all around the world, and it's really us. We are the media, and we need to take that back. So we need to be the media, and that's what the whole project's all about. It's just a collaborative forum for conscious citizens, artists, and activists to unite and to have a voice.
And you're an artist as well, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like your blend of art and news. It's kind of got a nice yin-yang effect to it, I think, getting information from both sides of the spectrum. Well, the catchphrase that you've got is reporting from outside party lines. So why is this important to you? What are you looking for there?
Well, Doug, as a former Democrat, you know, I was really sucked into the left-right paradigm for a long time. My ex-boyfriend in high school joined the military because of 9/11, and I was just completely anti-Bush. Anyone but Bush at the time, I was just blinded by my hatred for, you know, the president, and just my desire to end the wars, and I just thought it was all the Republicans' fault, and I was completely sucked in. I campaigned for Kerry. I went to a swing state trip, and then once Kerry took a dive, you know, he said he'd have lawyers on the ground in Ohio, he'd count every vote, and 10 a.m. that morning of the election, he took a total dive, and I kind of just woke up, and I just said, wait, something's not right. And then I found out about 9/11, and it just was, you know, spiraled from there, where I realized that we are living in a false left-right paradigm, where two opposing major political parties have people divided so they can conquer us. And, I mean, we're fighting against each other on these ridiculous issues that will never change in any federal election because they're way too divisive. Then we will never fight who we're supposed to fight. If we unify together, then we can win. But right now, it's a divide-and-conquer mentality, and it's all about Republicans versus Democrats, and that's the paradigm we're living in, and it's totally manufactured by the establishment.
Why do you think they go through such lengths to create this split? Well, you know, this is actually kind of an interesting. I'm having a hard time figuring out how to approach this issue because it is so strange, I think, for people. People get so caught up in the left-right paradigm that it's hard to kind of break through and say, well, why, you know, why should I think differently? I guess let's start with what happened to you as you did start to look into an alternate point of view. What did you discover then? I would say that I had a pretty similar experience, definitely about 9/11, but also with the Kerry election and the thing that went on in Ohio. I mean, they pretty much busted the Bush administration for fixing the election there, and then they did nothing about it. So you got to start wondering, you know, what's going on there. So anyway, can you just kind of describe a little bit more of that journey of breaking away from the left-right paradigm, and then what you started to find as you were looking in this different direction?
Yeah, sure. I guess it was just realizing that there's a bigger picture and that there's players that are, you know, it isn't going to be the people in the smoky room and conspiring. It's just very simple. It's cut and dry. I mean, there's just a bigger picture at hand. The media and the political establishment work together to formulate a certain narrative and to shut out any other people that will have a chance, like Ron Paul, Cynthia McKinney. I mean, these people are not in line with the establishment. And so it really, what it is when you look into any issue, you realize that there's very vested interest in why this issue isn't getting out. For example, the war. I mean, we hear just such baseless rhetoric about the war. We think that we're even fighting over there for ridiculous reasons that are completely infantile. I mean, to hate us for our freedoms. I mean, this rhetoric we hear is just pumped into the media establishment, and we don't hear anything real. So when you look into any issues, like, for example, what's going on in Afghanistan, the opium crop there, 90% of the world's heroin is coming from Afghanistan, and you're like, why haven't I heard about this? And when I talk to a lot of people about these issues, they're just like, well, I haven't heard about that, so I have a hard time believing that. And I'm like, well, you watch corporate news, you know, and they're just like, yeah, I watch Fox or I watch CNN, and they haven't really talked about that. And so I think a lot of people just have so much faith in the media establishment without realizing that there's boards of directors who are invested in the weapons industry, right. Invested in, you know, GE, General Electric owns NBC. They built the reactors in Fukushima. They have 23 sister reactors here. Of course, they're not going to want to talk about the dangers of nuclear energy and how we can't safely harness it. I mean, so there's very vested interest in why stories aren't getting out. And so when I started to look into 9/11, I just realized the bigger picture. I saw that, you know, Democrats were equally as complicit. Mm-hmm. And what really pissed me off, I think, was when Pelosi said, you know, impeachment's off the table. And that was when I was starting to kind of, everything was unraveling, and I kind of was starting to look at 9/11, and I was just like, this is completely wrong. Why are they doing this? Why are they covering up for the Republicans to the extent that they're criminally complicit in it? And so just realizing things like that, and you just have to remove yourself from that loyalty. People have a certain loyalty to a party, like a football team. I don't understand it. I mean, I do understand it because I was there, but I don't understand how people can't grow out of it and see it and learn from it. And a lot of people still are just so loyal for Obama. And, you know, I realize my mistake, and I just hope that people can wake up to the fact that he is essentially Bush Light.
Right. Well, one of the things that got me about Obama was when you realize that the people that he hires, I mean, you're still looking at, you know, the Treasury Department, people work for Goldman Sachs, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. They hire, whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president, they hire the same people from the same organization. So that kind of put a light bulb on, you know, for me to just say, well, I mean, you know, there seems to be this left-right paradigm that we're given all the time in the media, but then when you look at the people on the ground that are doing the work, it's these same organizations that are really making it happen every time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He said, no, I'm not going to have lobbyists, and he hires the same lobbyists. I mean, from Monsanto, Raytheon. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you had a Goldman Sachs pretty much putting Obama in there. They gave him $100,000 in 2008. Probably will be more this time. So when you see banks, I mean, basically paying for candidates' campaigns, it's pretty absurd. And like you mentioned, the Trilateral Commission, yeah, you had him and Hillary Clinton both attending the Bilderberg Group in right. 2008, right, where they announced their candidacy together. So, and you saw the same thing, Rick Perry attended Bilderberg. It just seems like these establishment candidates are just groomed for years.
Well, this thing...
And it doesn't matter. And yeah, it totally just plays out like that.
This thing with Rick Perry has been blowing me away. You've got Ron Paul, who's been running for 6 months and gets almost literally no mention. That was one of the things I liked about listening to your program, Abby, was that I could hear you talk about Ron Paul and Cynthia McKinney in like the same sentence. And I feel the same way, actually. I mean, you're looking at whether you're on the left or the right side of the spectrum, there are people with integrity, and then there are a lot of people apparently who don't have integrity who are in Washington. And the ones that have integrity, whether they're on the left or the right, I mean, you've got to promote these people. They're actually trying to do a good job. They're trying to tell the people what's going on. So anyway, that was just an interesting facet about one of your programs that I listened to. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Ron Paul because of the way the corporate media is just completely ignoring him, while Rick Perry, who even before he announced his run, they were talking about him all over the place. So you can really see where the establishment media chooses some people and then chooses to ignore others.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Ron Paul, I love the guy. I agree with a lot of what he says, especially when he's talking about foreign policy and civil liberties. And yeah, it is funny because Rick Perry actually ran as a Democrat and won elections as a Democrat for years. So when you're looking at someone who's been groomed to fit into a particular mold, I mean, this guy's a chameleon. We don't know who he is. And that's why it's important not to believe this extremist rhetoric that they spout, because they're just doing exactly what the establishment wants them to do. Obviously, Rick Perry is not an extremist neocon. I mean, he was a Democrat for years and years. So who really is this guy?
Right.
And you see Ron Paul, yeah, completely being shut out. You know, he's gaining a lot of traction. In 2008, he was gaining a lot of traction. Unfortunately, didn't decide to go for it as an independent. But this time around, I think people are really getting behind him. And it's so funny to see the media just completely ignore him. It's just unbelievable. I'm sure everyone saw that, or if you didn't check it out, Jon Stewart did a really great piece showing just, you know, the blatant just turning the other way, blind eye against this candidate who's extremely viable and who has a ton of backing. He has the youth vote. I mean, he's really one of the only candidates that could win against Obama, and they are just ignoring him so bad because they do not want, I mean, he would shake up the system completely.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing they want.
I think there is a kind of an element of divide and conquer about the way that they do paint these portraits of these people. Like Rick Perry, like you said, was a Democrat 20 years ago, and now he's supposed to be this hardcore conservative and very Christian. I mean, you can see them like painting this portrait of this guy who's pushing that's pushing all the right buttons to turn him into a kind of a big time candidate. But it is this, it's, I think, this kind of divide and conquer thing. They want to put up the sort of Christian right against the intellectual left, maybe, or something like that. They're creating these, it seems to me, they're creating these, you know, completely separate camps, and then getting the people to kind of separate into one of the two camps and then fight each other about it. Do you want to, you know, just comment on that as well, this divide and conquer mentality?
Yeah, no, it is really interesting. And you see these elections come up every time, abortion, gay rights, elections that no one will ever agree on, because 380 million people living in a country, it's hard to make a blanket federal law. And so you have just this constant division and constant heat going on between the two sides of these very divisive issues, and you have these political candidates playing upon them when, you know, we're not talking about the elephant in the room, which is obviously our, you know, our unsustainable wars, our defense spending, the fact that our rights have been eroded. So you have these issues that, yeah, divide and conquer. That's exactly what it is. We interviewed Cindy Sheehan a couple months ago, and she said something really interesting, that Sarah Palin was actually insurance for Obama to get reelected. And I couldn't help but just think about her saying that. When I look at someone like Michelle Bachmann, I just think that, you know, and yeah, it might not be true, but you can't discount the fact that Michelle Bachmann is making people go with that whole lesser two evils thing. They look at someone like her, just like they did Sarah Palin when she jumped on McCain's ticket, and they were just like, well, I can't in good conscience vote for a Palin-McCain ticket, because if Palin becomes president, like, I won't be able to live with myself if I didn't vote for Obama.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's pretty much that mentality. It's like, it's a knee-jerk reaction of fear-mongering people like good cop, bad cop, the lesser of two evils. And that's a false dichotomy. That's not just one or the other. There's others there. There's other candidates. I mean, why should we vote against our own interests? That's not democracy. And I don't want to be fear-mongered into voting for a candidate that might be a little bit less, I mean, it's still a mass murderer.
Right.
Just a more intelligent, more kind version of Bush. I mean, so I'd go for a more intelligent mass murderer? No, I don't support what's going on in the Middle East, and I'll never vote for someone who's supporting that. And they just put up these extreme GOP candidates, these Tea Partiers, who are siphoning the energy off what Ron Paul really is for, and just take it to the extreme. And people who identify themselves as liberal, green, libertarian will continue to knee-jerkly vote for these bought and paid-for establishment candidates that just are going to precede the policies that have bankrupted and demoralized the nation.
Let's talk a little bit. I saw that piece that you did about the six major corporations that control the mainstream media. People, I don't think, really fully understand how, I think the number is something like 85% of the media that we are bombarded with are controlled by these six major corporations. And we touched on a little bit before, but, you know, one of those corporations is GE, that makes nuclear power plants, that, you know, huge defense contracts. Obviously, they have a vested interest in promoting a certain point of view. So can you talk about really how tightly controlled the mainstream media is?
Yeah, well, we see, I mean, yeah, there's, you know, it's hard to, for people to grasp this concept if you aren't aware of this, because mm-hmm. there's hundreds of channels on TV, a ton of radio stations. I mean, you don't really sit down and think, well, where are all these mediums and channels being filtered through? And they're all being filtered through six different corporations. And it's hard to grasp that, because you think that you're getting this variety. Like when you go to the grocery store and you're like, oh, I can choose from so many different things. And that's what you feel like, the information is coming unfiltered and it's coming from a bunch of different reliable sources, but it's really not, and it's very manipulative. You have CBS, General Electric, News Corporation, Time Warner, Disney, and Viacom. And I think there actually might have been a merger since I did that report,
right.
Between one of those. So maybe there is five, and I'll definitely look into that and correct that. But, you know, you see certain stories like Monsanto's bovine growth hormone, where Monsanto actually told Fox News, don't air this story. You had a couple independent reporters doing a story on Monsanto, and you see direct red tape coming from these corporate board members just saying, don't talk about that. And so you see just different elements of censorship going on in the corporate press. You see direct censorship where there's actually, like in the example of Fox News, where there's talking points to the reporters, this is what you can't talk about, this is what you should talk about. And then you have people like Cenk Uygur, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name, he's the guy from the Young Turks.
Mm-hmm.
He was working at MSNBC, and he was doing his thing, you know, kind of critical about President Obama, definitely not critical enough, but, you know, he was a little bit more on the critical side. And someone, a higher-up, took him in his office, and he just said, look, Cenk, he's like, I've spoken to people in Washington, and they don't like your tone. And he said, so basically what ended up happening is that they told him that he was going to be demoted, changed around to a different time slot, but for more pay, kind of like hush money, but not really.
Huh.
Like, so not direct censorship, but essentially saying, you know, you need to play by the rules, buddy, otherwise you're not going to be working here anymore. And so he stepped down, and now he's just doing the Young Turks again. But that's another example of censorship in a more just elusive way, where you're not directly saying, don't talk about this. You're just saying, look, you need to kind of, you are the establishment.
Yeah.
So don't get up there and buck it, because that's exactly what this is. So it's basically the corporate media, you know, they're owned by corporate conglomerates, and they have vested interests. You see board members on defense, working on Monsanto, working in food. For example, you see Viet Dinh. This is a really interesting one. Viet Dinh is an executive of News Corp, and he also wrote the Patriot Act. So why, it's just like, why is this guy who's working for a giant media conglomerate writing political legislation? And then you see John Bryson, director of Disney, he's also the director of Boeing, which is one of the biggest defense contractors in the world. Frederick Salerno, director of Viacom, also the director of CBS. He's also the director of National Fuel and Gas Company. So it's just, you see energy, media, food, weapons. And you see these same people who are working in these industries, going to these things like the Bilderberg Group and the Trilateral Commission, and working hand-in-hand to recommend policy prescriptions to certain politicians. It's just like, it's not necessarily people in a smoky room conspiring to control the world. It's just, you know, these people are, their bottom line is profit maximization. And you see them just working hand in hand with politicians to make sure that that happens. And when you see them lobbying excessively to Congress year after year, you just have to ask yourself, whose interests are being played out in the political process? Certainly not ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's strange that we have this system that, I don't know, I think we're all kind of trained from when we're young to believe that we have all these freedoms here in the United States, and we believe that we have the freedom of speech, and then you don't, You know, it's not like it was, say, in the Soviet Union where they're going out and they're beating you over the head. You know, they just squeeze you out of the market is how they do it when you say something that they don't want to be heard, or they discredit a different point of view to the point, or they simply ignore it. I mean, that's the thing, like as with Ron Paul, like they just don't mention it. So nobody thinks it's that big of an issue.
Exactly. Yeah, 9/11.
Well, I saw your interview with Peter Phillips from Project Censored.
Yes.
And will you talk about that a little bit? Because he did go into sort of like in the old Soviet Union, you had, you know, Pravda, that was the state newspaper, and everybody just knew that they were lying. But here in the United States, where we really have a similar kind of censorship, everyone just sucks it up and they soak it up and they believe it, you know, and they can't imagine that there could be any kind of censorship going on somehow, or that, you know, a few people would have the power to kind of to create media issues and make things important that really maybe shouldn't be important. So will you talk about that interview
exactly.
a little bit?
Sure, and I'm actually really excited to say that I just got on the board of Project Censored. I'm working closely with Peter now, which is really exciting.
Nice.
I contributed a portion to their book coming out. Peter is amazing. He basically pointed out exactly what you're saying, is that, you know, people in other countries know the propaganda model that they're living under. Here in America, we are convinced that we're the freest country in the world. It's truly remarkable. And I don't know if it's because of the level of propaganda or psychological manipulation. You know, we know that we adopted Edward Bernays's Nazi style Goebbels techniques of propaganda and
manipulation. Yeah, I did a show about him. I did a show about him a couple months back, just to kind of show people that these are really the roots of where the modern system comes from today. It's hard for people to believe. And the funny thing was, when I was reading the histories of Edward Bernays, just because you mentioned him, you know, back then they were unabashed. Like now they don't, you know, back then it was like, we're the smart intellectuals and we need to manipulate the herd with our psychoanalysis, you know? And they're just talking about it straight up. You can go back and you can read these guys and it's like, wow, they don't really care that much about the people, do they?
And you know, it's hard to convince people that we're not that way. So it's like that whole myth, the liberal media. Like, you hear that growing up, the liberal media, the liberal media. It's like, so then you're automatically on the defense arguing that the media is not liberal. And that's kind of the same idea. You know, we grow up basically propagandized that we are the freest country in the world, that we need to go, not only are we the freest country in the world, but we need to go spread our freedom to other countries, right?
Yeah, I know. That's the best.
We need to give people this freedom. It's so
Stupid. They don't like us because of our freedom, and we have to force our freedom onto them so they'll figure it out.
So it's so much harder to convince people, not only are we not the freest country in the world, but we're almost, I mean, we have the most people incarcerated than any other country in the entire world. I mean, we have incarceration rates right next to Iran and China.
Right.
I mean, so when you're looking at, you know, how free are we?
Yeah, I know.
You know, I mean, it's just, so yeah, it's really hard because people automatically have that kind of talking point instilled in them, like, oh no, we're the best democracy in the world.
Yeah.
But really, you know, it's extremely flawed, and no, we've definitely lost most of our civil liberties ever since the Bush reign took over and continued into the Obama administration.
Yeah, I do think it's been going on for a long time. I mean, we could probably go back to the Kennedy assassination or before that, where certainly, you know, honestly, I think it goes back to Eisenhower's military-industrial complex. I mean, he was on it. He knew what was happening, and then that just has sort of taken over. I mean, when the government starts paying a certain sector of the population, you know, billions and hundreds of billions of dollars to produce a war machine, then those people are going to start making policy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And going back to what you just said about Bernays being really open about what they were doing, just a funny quote from Henry Kissinger that I just pulled up, where he says, military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy. So this is just the mentality of these people. I mean, Henry Kissinger, and one thing, Henry Kissinger actually won a Nobel Peace Prize as well. after the Vietnam War. I guess for his illegal bombings in Laos and Cambodia. Oh,
right, you got to wonder. You got to wonder about the people at the Nobel Peace Prize sometimes. Like, huh, interesting choice.
yeah, good call, guys. it's amazing. Never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about a few issues that the media has been. One of the things that got me was watching, for example, we've got another connection here with British Petroleum and the BP oil spill, where the coverage on that was really atrocious. You know, as I was thinking about this interview, actually, one of the things I realized about the coverage of that, and we can even talk about, say, the coverage of the Osama bin Laden killing that went down 6 months ago or whatever. It's these situations where, like, for example, for the first probably 4 months of the BP oil spill, the only information that we were getting at all was either from the government or it was from BP. And they weren't letting anybody else say anything. And everyone just sort of believed if the government says it, then it must be true. You know, just straight up. Like, oh, the government's our only source for this information. It must be true. When in fact, you catch the government lying all the time, it's not the most trustworthy institution, you know, from my experience. So what is it about it that, you know, we'll accept these media stories and we'll just accept that the government tells us this, and so it's true, and, you know, until, like, situations like yours where a citizen journalist will go in with a camera and take some pictures and start figuring it out.
And that's what you saw happen with the BP spill. The government was saying for months, oh, it's fine, we're working on it. No mention really of the magnitude of it, too. And that's what was so weird to me, that the footage that we saw of the BP spill as it was happening, there was no frame of reference. Mm-hmm. It was just like you didn't really see how big it was. It was like, what are we looking at right now? There was no talk on how is BP going to be punished. In fact, we're getting the majority of our oil and gas exports from BP, awarding them with billion-dollar contracts every year. So these people are rewarded, not punished. When you're a big corporate CEO and you destroy the ocean and cause a holocaust of sea creatures, then I guess that you're awarded with more contracts. It's really astounding. Mm-hmm. The media, I think it's twofold. I think you see with the Fukushima crisis, too. I think the government doesn't want to. What are they going to gain by, I guess, telling the stark reality to people, you know, get the hell out of this area?
Right.
Of course, you have to say, you know, everything's okay, everything's under control. And I guess that was the same with the BP spill for a little bit. I could see that. But on the other hand, I mean, yeah, they completely underplayed that, and then it just kind of went away, and it's like, well, what happened? What did it cause? There's people with there's tar balls still being washed up. There's people with skin disease because of the dispersant that they sprayed, which actually did more damage than help. People are getting cancer, and not cancer, but just really irritated skin, and like, it's pretty crazy what's happening in the Gulf right now with the residents there. They can't fish anymore. I mean, their livelihood's over. And BP's trying to stop the payments to them. They are a despicable corporation, and they're working hand in hand with the federal government.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me take a few minutes to do a station break here. It's 9:32. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Report here on KZYX. I'm your host, Doug McKenty. This morning I'm speaking with Abby Martin of MediaRoots.org, where they are reporting from outside party lines. We're talking a little bit about the left-right paradigm and just different perspectives on how to analyze the information that you get from the media and maybe what media sources to pay attention to. And so there has been a kind of a rise, I think, with the internet in the last 10 years of, I think, as you call it, citizen journalism, where just people on the streets are saying, hey, you know, I've seen something go down. Maybe I got a picture of it. I can throw it up on the internet. I can have my own blog. We can have, ideas that are outside of the ideas that you're getting from the mainstream media. Do you see yourself as with Media Roots, I think, as a part of this whole movement that's going down? And what are the different perspectives? Because I think, especially as the 10 years, say, have passed, or 15 years of really getting in on the internet, there is a different point of view that's growing amongst the citizen journalists in really stark contrast with what you're getting from the mainstream media. Do you want to discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was really influenced by my friend Luke Radowski, who founded We Are Change, and I was doing 9/11 Truth stuff in San Diego, where I moved up to Oakland from a couple of years ago. So I was it started off as that kind of confrontational, going out with the camera and getting the scoop, confronting politicians, and really just like, you know, the media is not doing its job, so I need to do it for them. And then I realized that, you know, you can catch more flies with honey than with whatever that phrase is.
Right. Thank you for...
I'm like, no. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So, you know, just a more professional approach where now we're actually trying to engage with people and get a different story that isn't as confrontational. But I still commend all what We Are Change is doing. I mean, you had Luke just confronting Larry Silverstein, which was amazing. You know, so these people, we got to keep doing this. We got to keep holding these people's feet to the fire because the media sure as heck ain't doing their job.
Yeah.
I definitely see Media Roots as part of this movement. And the perspective we're coming from is basically we're critical of everything that the establishment says, whether it be corporate media or politicians. Ask questions, demand answers. And that's going to this whole Bin Laden death. This is a perfect example of how lacking of critical thinking is in this country. We're just told this talking point. You know, we catch Bin Laden after 10 years. We're engaged in 3 immoral and illegal wars, bombing other countries, trillions of dollars in debt, 1 million Iraqis dead. And we just are told, oh, Bin Laden's dead. And that's all we need. I mean, we don't even ask, we don't even demand for proof.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the level of just, I guess, just acceptance. And so really this whole media renaissance is just, we're not taking it anymore. We're asking, we're demanding the truth about everything.
Right.
And whether it be a Democrat or Republican, you know, we're looking at, when you say it, who's funding you? Where does the money come from? Where does it lead? Cui bono? You know, just look at, you know, who's funding these campaigns? Who's funding these politicians? And who's directly invested in this propaganda?
Well, that's one of the things that I think, as you get outside the party lines, and you're not arguing about Republican versus Democrat anymore. I have this experience where I actually, when I was in college, I interned for Congress. And so I went to Congress, you know, to intern for my congressman, and I was thinking that I was going to be able to watch these guys debating, you know, economic theory and political philosophy on the floor of the House of Representatives. And all they were doing was seeing lobbyists all day, you know. I mean, I got there and I was like, oh, I can't wait. You know, I'm studying politics and whatnot, and I'm going to get involved and I'm going to watch these guys have these, you know, sort of high class debates over these issues. And that just wasn't what they do. What they do is they take the hundreds of billions of dollars that they've got in their budget and they try to parcel out as much of it into companies that are from their districts as possible. You know, I mean, that's their job.
Right.
And so when you realize that these politicians aren't actually arguing these, you know, socialism versus capitalism, they're just parceling out money. And I think this is what, at least for me, happened. As you get outside the party lines, as you get outside the left-right paradigm, then you just want to follow the money. You know, let's see where the money leads.
Yeah.
And then you end up painting this whole different picture. Mostly, I feel like, about corruption. You know,
yeah.
It's like, wow,
yeah.
They're taking hundreds of billions of dollars and they're keeping as much of it as they possibly can for themselves. Anyway, I mean, have you had a similar experience? Is that what you're kind of finding, that you know, when you get away from thinking that there's some high debate going on, different political philosophies, and you just look at the money, you know, what do you find?
Well, yeah, I mean, perfect example is 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the event that really shook me out, you know, shook me to my core and kind of startled me out of the left-right paradigm, I guess you could say, was 9/11. And when you follow the money there, pretty interesting, and when you just see who's profited, obviously, off the tragedy, and when I talk to a lot of people about 9/11, they're just like, well, why would the government be involved in something like that? And you're just like, well, who profited off 9/11? I mean, it wasn't these 19 Arabs that supposedly, you know, well, I'm not questioning the fact that they died. I'm just saying the story that we're given is that these 19 Arabs worked alone to do what they did. And it's like, did the Middle East profit off this? You know, Saudi Arabia, which is where they were from, did this country profit off it? I mean, did Bin Laden profit off it? No.
Mm-hmm.
You just see war contractors immensely profiting from the war on terror. And you see Cheney immensely profiting from the war on
terror. Right.
I mean,
and the Bush family.
Millions. Bush family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal. KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, Blackwater, just the most despicable contractors, these war, you know, thugs for hire that Blackwater still just got awarded a $250 million contract from Obama last year. I mean, Obama's the new sugar daddy for Blackwater. So this is, you know, these companies are still profiting immensely, and the war on terror is far from over. In fact, I don't know if it ever is going to be over. I mean, of course, it eventually will be, but this is going to be going on for a long time. We just saw a pact signed that extended the troop presence in Afghanistan until 2024.
Hmm.
Very underreported element of that war. So a lot of people don't even know that we're still there.
Yeah, I know.
We don't hear about it on the corporate media.
It seems amazing. It's almost like Fukushima. Like there's still a nuclear disaster going on, but nobody's talking about it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I just read a report about Fukushima that said the cesium-137 is equivalent to that of 168 Hiroshima nuclear bombs.
Right.
So that's the amount of radiation just seeping out. I mean, yeah, we do not hear about Fukushima. In fact, we should be talking about that. Every world leader should be getting together and talking about how we can phase out nuclear energy immediately.
Yeah.
Because that is, you know, if anything shows us that we can't properly, safely harness this technology, it's Fukushima. But once again, you see the corporate malfeasance and kind of this revolving door going on in TEPCO. The CEO of TEPCO was just raking in cash and bypassing these safety standards and tests and falsifying information. And the Nuclear Regulatory Agency just said, look, these reactors would have failed if there was an earthquake or not. They were so badly dilapidated, and you guys had been lying and falsifying that they were safe for a decade. So that's another underreported aspect of Fukushima, is that those reactors have melted down regardless of whether or not there was an earthquake or not because of how badly the state they were in. It's just unreal. I mean, it's just like, how short-sighted are these people? I mean, you're willing to put humanity at risk so you can, what, make an extra buck? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, we've got about a little less than 20 minutes left in the program. At the beginning of the show, you talked about kind of about waking up. I think this is part of what needs. I think that we get. I know that I used to be, and I think you as well. Your personal identity is wrapped up in your political belief system, and that's where the left-right paradigm kind of comes into play for a lot of people. And then there's got to come this moment where, and a lot of people even talk about it as kind of waking up, where you realize, wait a minute. You know, this paradigm isn't functioning for me. This is not what's really going on. What's really going on is this kind of other set of belief systems. Can you just talk about that? I think maybe even a little psychological transformation for a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk mostly just coming from my perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a very staunchly democratic family. My grandpa was staunch Democrat. I just remember it every holiday meal, he would just be yelling about pro-democratic talking points, and so I grew up in that mindset, and I never really was political, but, you know, I spoke before about my boyfriend joining the army to fight the terrorists that got us in 9/11, quote-unquote, and that really kind of catapulted me into caring, but of course I was blinded and also just conditioned from my childhood to be coming from that angle. But of course, more and more you see, you know, the media was playing into the Iraq war and not questioning why we should invade the sovereign nation. And so, you know, slowly I began to realize that the media was complicit. And if the media is complicit, obviously it's not just one party controlling that. There's other factors at play. But, you know, it's hard. We are conditioned in this country to not talk about politics and religion. It's very interesting because in other countries, people have very heated debates about politics and religion all the time. But for some reason, I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. We are conditioned in this country to not talk about that. It's almost like, you know, don't talk about politics and religion at the dinner table. It's like that little adage, and you're like, but why?
Right.
We're never going to progress and evolve together. We need to talk about this stuff. We need to challenge the societal dogma if we ever want to collectively evolve our consciousness together and move on to a new 21st century enlightenment. Because right now we are, I mean, the establishment wants us to be stuck in these old school ways of thinking and just adhering to the team. Like you said, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. I think, first of all, people like belonging to a team. They like rooting for a team. They like feeling like they're being represented. But like, it's even funny to see people get so heated about certain sports teams where you see like riots in the street. I mean, sports teams players don't care about the team. They'll switch teams all the time.
Right.
If they get paid more. You know, I mean, they don't have any loyalty to the team.
Yeah.
It would be like the sports fans just are so, just in such a fervor about this team is my team. And I think you see kind of the same thing about politics, and it works the same way. Politicians don't care. Like you see Rick Perry. I mean, he's a chameleon. He changes whatever the establishment wants to groom him into. He will do that. And you see people taking money and passing certain policy prescriptions based on what they're getting in the back door. Obama is a great example of that. He says one thing, he does another based on, he said, follow the money. You just got to follow the money and see what he's doing, not what he's saying. So I think it's really time for us to collectively challenge that and really just start engaging with the information, asking questions, and being critical about everything that we're told. Because we really can't trust these people. I mean, the people who are telling us the news, the corporate media, we can't trust them because they have vested interests. So it's time for us to really stand up and say, we're not going to just blindly follow this anymore. We can't just sit back and watch our country just go bankrupt. I mean, who knows what's going to happen if we just continue this trajectory into the Middle East where we're spending more and more exponentially growing our military apparatus year after year, but constantly cannibalizing social services.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
it really is. It's the elephant in the room.
It was funny to hear this whole early part of this summer, this whole debt ceiling debate, and, you know, constantly talking about, you know, bashing, cutting, slashing these social services, and almost no mention about defense spending. That's another thing that kind of just blew me away, and it's another way I think that you can see where the corporate media, they really are controlling this debate, and they'll ignore the defense spending part of it. It's like we're obviously in a situation where since 9/11, you know, we've multiplied our defense spending to the point where it's completely bankrupted the country. I mean, this is what's going on, you know. People aren't talking about it. They're talking about cutting social services, and then the left-right paradigm comes in, and it's like, well, the Republicans want a strong defense, and the Democrats want to save the social spending, and then the whole, like, what's going on with the wars and what's really happening with the budget is just sort of passes over people's heads.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't you support the troops? You're like, what? I just don't want them to die needlessly. I mean,
right.
By supporting the troops, I mean, what? It's these really weird things. And yeah, I mean, you saw Panetta, I think it was, and I'm not positive about that, but he, when this whole, you know, talk about shared sacrifice and we need to sacrifice social services and cut all across the board, but not defense. Because if we cut defense, our country's going to be weak. And you're like, but wait. How weak is it really going to be? I mean, the defense budget has doubled since 9/11. So were we weak? You know, when 9/11 happened, yeah, I guess you could argue if you think that it was just complete incompetence, yeah, I could guess you could say justify that in some way. But I mean, we've made a whole new department, the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, just the pork that has gone into the growth of the defense industry since 9/11. And no, we weren't weak then. We still had the greatest military in the world. We spend more on our military than any other country in the world combined.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
I
crazy.
Think that we can shave it back a little bit.
Right.
It's unreal. Yeah. And the fact that that's not being talked about should be, you know, that's the biggest smoking gun right there, the control of the media.
Yeah.
Everyone across the board can agree that the amount that we spend on defense is actually making our country more weak. And like Martin Luther King has this great quote, and I'm going to butcher it right now, actually, where he just says, you know, a nation that spends more and more on defense than programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death.
Right.
And that's really what we're seeing year after year. It's just unbelievable.
All right, well, the time is 9:49. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Report here on KZYX. I'm your host, Doug McKenty. This morning I'm speaking with Abby Martin, the founder of MediaRoots.org, where they are reporting from outside party lines. We're talking about the left-right paradigm this morning. Let's spend the last part of the program talking a little bit about 9/11 here, because that was really,
sure.
You know, what happened. We're getting on to the 10th anniversary. So, you know, it's actually been kind of funny for me. I just remember, you know, right after it happened, just sort of the fervor, I think, of really trying to find out what happened. I guess I was always kind of suspicious about the whole government situation. I was in Austin at the time, which is where Alex Jones hails from. So I was actually started listening to him after 9/11. And I was shocked at first because he was really, you know, he was talking about the false flag operation and that there were elements inside the government that at least allowed it to happen, if not, you know, organized it and made it happen in order to justify this this whole war plan that they had. And I was shocked at first. And then, you know, just eventually he actually started to convince me because he just had a lot of facts that you don't get from the mainstream media. And that was one of the things I wanted to bring up. The mainstream media never, they never really follow a story. This is one of the reasons why I started to, you know, suspect it, because they'll give you a headline, but then next week the headline will be different and they're not following, like, for example, Fukushima. Who's following that story? Nobody's on that story, you know? And that is what people like Alex Jones and I think yourself and from the community, the citizen journalist point of view, are filling in the dots and completing the story, figuring out exactly what happened. So anyway, what do you think about 9/11 and what was your journey to get to that place?
Oh, wow. Well, 9/11 changed my life. Like I said, you know, I was personally invested in it because I was worried about my boyfriend at the time going to fight for these wars. So I was starting to just be an anti-war activist. And then I saw like a 7-minute video clip just about the Pentagon. It piqued my interest a little bit. I didn't really think too much of it. And a couple of years later, my brother showed me one of Alex Jones' documentaries, and I was just like, this is way too much for me to handle.
Right.
Way too intense. Like, his approach, I remember, was a little bit of a turnoff. But
he's pretty hardcore.
But it was too much.
Yeah.
But I ended up, I love him. I've met him before. I really value his work. I think that he does really good work. Sometimes he goes off the deep end and kind of fear-mongers in the same style that the establishment does. But I saw Martial Law, and then so I sat on it for a while, and then I saw Loose Change, which is a little bit more of a gentle, I guess, resonates more with the youth, the hip hop soundtrack and all that. And so I was just like, okay, I'm ready to watch the Alex Jones documentary again. So I watched the documentary again. I was like, you know what? I have to find out if all this is true, because I was blown away. I was just like, I was really upset. And so I just became obsessed with researching, and I remember I had this huge binder, and I got every single news report that they said and that they mentioned, and I just archived it in a giant folder in my house. And I remember I printed out all of the oral testimonies that David Griffin talks about, where he mentioned first responders and firefighters talking about explosions in the building. And so I went through and printed out the oral testimonies and highlighted the parts where they talk about that and compiled it into just a huge page of information, and finally I said to face, it was true. I mean, I'm looking at the evidence right in front of me, and I've done it myself at this point, and I'm just like, you know, this is real. This is happening. And so kind of just having to accept that after doing it, and then looking at the media and saying, they are failing so hard in reporting this, they're covering it up to the point where they're criminally negligent as well, and they're just lambasting anyone who questions the official story with names and, you know, ad hominem attacks to anyone questioning anything at all. Even if you just bring up 9/11, it's like you're a heretic. So seeing the visceral kind of attack coming from the establishment about anyone who had any questions about 9/11, and then seeing this giant network of people, architects, engineers, pilots, actors, just all these people who are, you know, scientists, physicists, who are compiling huge network of information that was very, very credible. And you're just like, why is this huge network of information that completely contradicts the official story being hidden from us?
Completely ignored.
Very obvious, you know?
Yeah.
Completely ignored. Completely ignored. So that was my journey, was just going into that. And then I started just going to different, kind of trying to break through the left-right paradigm in my community, which was San Diego at the time, which was also a huge military town. So it was a very interesting journey to be out there doing 9/11 truth activism in an area that was saturated with that mentality. But I would go to, like, I remember I went to a Greek palace book signing, and I was wearing a shirt that said question 9/11, and I tried to ask him a question about 9/11, and he kind of shut me down. And that's when I realized kind of the gatekeeping that was going on with the liberal establishment as well. And I really saw that firsthand when I was trying to reach out to the liberal community and even the anti-war community in San Diego. And I was just like, why do people not see that this is the bigger picture? And there's plenty of evidence to back up the fact that they helped carry out 9/11. And no one wanted to hear it. And I think it's too much. People like having their worldview fit into a nice, tidy package. And this is just taking it a little bit too far, where they are forced out of that. And they're forced out of that, and they're forced to see the bigger picture and therefore maybe do something about it. And I think people are just really comfortable in what they think the world is like. They like thinking the government's like this parental fatherly figure who takes care of you.
Right. Well, that's why I think it is a psychological recognition, you know, to realize in a way that your father might not be as nice as you thought he was, you know.
I mean,
we really do have this parental kind of connection with the government, and we think that it's taking care of us. But really, you know, should we trust it as much as we really do? And it is a kind of an awakening that you have to go through to really look at it with a critical eye and understand that, you know, there are a lot of forces at work in this huge apparatus, and we need to keep a close eye on what everybody's doing, or else they might get away with, you know, a lot of things that cause a lot of harm to a lot of people, like several wars in the Middle East. And one of the things that kind of got me around 9/11 was that, just the whole neocon movement, even. For example, this is something that I find out, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 years into the Bush presidency, that these guys were all neocons. And I was like, well, they didn't run on the neocon platform, you know?
Right.
They didn't
right.
tell the people that they had had all these plans to invade Iraq, you know, 5 years before there was ever a 9/11, that they were already working and planning on going into Iraq before 9/11. I mean, you know, all of these things. That I found out later, it was just another thing. The Project for a New American Century and their pamphlet about rebuilding America's defenses, where they called for completely changing the military, and then specifically says, I think this thing was written in 98 or 99, that we would need a Pearl Harbor-like attack on the American people in order for the American people to go for spending all the money and doing these wars and all of that. I mean, these guys are saying this stuff, and then all of a sudden 9/11 happens, and instead of treating it like, I mean, I think the very first thing that I thought about was that we could treat it as a criminal investigation, and they just completely, you know, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go to war. It's a, you know, it's a political, it's a nation state versus nation state thing, instead of just these 19 people, you know, attacking this building, and which would be a criminal, you know, investigation. So anyway, just seeing how they used the whole event to create a situation where they could go to war, which they were already planning on doing. Interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. And how ridiculous is that notion anyway, that we should go to war after one criminal?
Yeah.
Supposedly Bin Laden was being harbored in Afghanistan. Is that a reason to invade an entire nation? I mean, they did a poll last year. It said, like, over 90% of Afghanis didn't even know what 9/11 was.
Right.
About putting the first signs of these people. I mean, these people have no idea. They're poor goat herders in these areas that we're just obliterating.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal that this is the longest war in our history. We're going to stay there for a long, long time. And you have to ask yourself, why are we really there? You know? I mean, so, okay, great. Bin Laden's officially, quote, dead. So why are we there still? I mean, and there's reports that we're funding the Taliban. Karzai, the puppet regime, is dealing with the opium trade there. 90% of the world's heroin comes from there. It's just like, well, what the heck is going on there?
Right, I mean, and the oil pipeline.
More of the resource. Exactly.
Yeah, you find
and another, you know, Project Spencer, or I'm sorry.
Just about a minute left.
Okay. Project for New American Century also goes hand in hand with, if people say, how could they ever do that? Just look up Operation Northwoods. It's a declassified government document that Robert McNamara, you know, proposed to Kennedy, and it was rejected, thankfully. But it was a false flag attack being proposed to preempt an invasion of Cuba. So it's declassified. Everyone, I implore you to check that out if you think that this sounds kooky. It's definitely been planned before and luckily wasn't carried out. But these people, you know, they strategize and keep us up these things. So we should, too. We should understand their mentality.
Right. Well, just a few seconds left. Do you want to just talk about Media Roots for a quick second and give everybody the website?
Yeah, absolutely. It's mediaroots.org. My email is info@mediaroots.org. If anyone's an artist, activist, or just a journalist and they want to contribute, please contact me, mediaroots.org. Check it out. We got radio episodes every other week. We have original video reporting. We're always looking for collaborations, and we're always looking for submissions. So everyone keep up the great work, and let's get this media revolution going.
All right. Awesome, Abby. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Doug. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, everyone. That was Abby Martin from Media Roots, mediaroots.org, reporting from outside party lines. This has been the Thursday Morning Report. I've been your host. My name is Doug McKenty. Thank you for listening to the Thursday Morning Report. You've been listening on KZYX.